Testing.
And if I don't have that on, that's not going to work. It looks now like we're all set. Yes, okay. Let me begin by saying that I know you were born in Oklahoma before it was a state.
Territory, not Oklahoma. I'm 1 year older than Oklahoma.
Okay. How did your parents become pioneers in Oklahoma?
Well, my father was practicing law in Ohio, and he had decided that he was going down to Oklahoma and practice down there. It's going to be a new state. And that's what he did. And he met my mother down there. She had, and her father, the whole Gatlin family, had moved over from Arkansas my grandfather was in the mercantile business in Little Rock. And the whole family moved over to Oklahoma, and it ended up the boys had gone on further west. But the girls, one of them ended up in near Oklahoma City, and my mother and her father went on out further and settled in Tyrone. And my mother staked out a claim. Mm. 640 acres. The claims at that time were all 1 square mile. Mm-hmm. And my one other aunt, two aunts, they weren't too far from Oklahoma City, but one of them was in Eden and one of them in El Reno. And my mother staked this claim out. And so when my father and mother were married there, they decided, they would farm that claim for wheat. Tyrone, Oklahoma, or territory, was noted for its wheat production. And so I was born on that claim. And then, frankly, what was there was nothing but a hole in the ground called a dugout. Mm-hmm. And I was born in that dugout. And my mother and father, built a house on top of it. When I was 4 years old, not too long after I was 4 years old, I became 4 years old on December the 27th, and I waked up on a mattress out in the road that was near the house, and the house was on fire. And in fact, it was in the final stages, and it burned to the ground completely. So then my father decided, he would go into Hooker, Oklahoma, that was the county seat, to practice law. And he did. And that was a very poor place to practice law. He should come to Washington.
Where in Ohio had he come from?
He came from Corning, Ohio, and that's near Zanesville.
Okay, I know the area. So you probably don't have many recollections of your time in Oklahoma then.
Oh, yes.
Do you?
I have quite a number. I remember distinctly the fire, and I remember going, we moved into Hooker, Oklahoma. And there he was practicing law, trying to. And I recall very distinctly that we had a very hard time. They were also farming this land out on the claim, and they had three beautiful crops of wheat coming on, and each year the weather happened I think the first year it got up to the point where the lightning hit and it was all crisp and nice and ready for a fire, and it went, the whole 640 acres went up.
Thank gosh.
And the next year it rained, and they had the wheat in the stacks, but the wheat soured before they could get it thrashed. And the third year, the wheat was up, and the storm came up, and lightning and hail particularly beat it in the ground. So three successive years, and they decided that they were... My mother was really fascinated by the oil business, which was getting started in Bartlesville and Tulsa. Now, they traded the claim for a place in rooming house in Caney, Kansas. And Caney, Kansas is right on the state line. And when we went there, I was 7 years old. And the Phillips Petroleum Company were just getting started. And I remember a lot of those old casing head plants around them. And that was how Phillips got started. And they were quite successful. And of course, Phillips now is even a larger company than Sun. The company I finally ended up with. Not larger than Standard Oil of Indiana, where I started my professional practice of chemical engineering at Whiting.
Was oil ever discovered on your mother's claim?
No. In fact, if they had looked for gas, the largest gas field in the contingent of the United States is the Hugoton field, and it extends all the way from Hugoton, Kansas, down near Amarillo, Texas. Tremendous field. Well, this whole 640 acres was in the was in a gas field, so they would have been quite prosperous right there. So that's a very good example
very
of the story Acres of Diamonds, and I'm sure you've read that. That's a classic. That.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they would have stayed right there, they wouldn't have made it in wheat, but they would have made it in natural gas. So that's... They went to Caney, Kansas, because Caney had discovered gas in shallow fields there, and they really attracted a lot of industry by intentionally lighting one of those gas wells. It threw a gas flame about 300 feet in the air, and it went night and day for quite a long time. And
so did you grow up there?
In Caney. I went through grade school and high school in Caney, yes.
Yeah, but remembrances of those experiences, teachers, or anything that fascinated you in school?
Yes, I had several excellent teachers in the grade schools. I think Caney had an unusually good school system. Frankly, it's far better than the Washington system, where they can't even teach them to read here. And when I went into high school, I had a number of teachers there that were excellent. Now there's one of them that is still active. She's 90 years old. And her husband, I played basketball in high school. That was when people my size could play basketball and become proficient at it. And there was a basketball player at KU, that's the University of Kansas, at Lawrence, Kansas. And I was rather, well, sort of as a kid, I sort of idolized him. Mm-hmm. Well, he went to work for Phillips, and he and this school teacher met and married, and he went up and he became the chief executive officer of Phillips.
Oh, really?
And I correspond with him still. In fact, I'm corresponding with him concerning a paper that I have written that deals with the production of synthetic crude oil from oil shale. And there are eastern states that there's quite an adequate amount of shale to last a couple of thousand years, replacing the crude oil that's being imported. Now, we import approximately 7 million barrels a day of crude oil. And that could be replaced with this oil shale. And I've gone through a preliminary process design of a plant to recover this oil from shale. Now, I think I sent
yes,
you a copy.
Yes, you sent me a copy of that paper.
Okay.
Who is the person at Phillips that you're talking to?
Now, he's retired, and he's very careful that he doesn't meddle in the affairs of mm-hmm. Phillips, although Phillips was they had 60,000 acres leased in Indiana for shale, and they were going to go into it in a big way, but they discovered the Ekofisk oil field over in the North Sea near mm-hmm. Norway. Mm-hmm. And after they discovered that field, they were not interested in oil shale.
I was in Bartlesville in February.
Oh, you were?
And I was working in the Phillips archives.
Oh, yeah.
And so I picked up literature on that field. They have a good museum there.
His name was Paul Endicott. I didn't answer your question.
One of the reasons I was asking is that you said he was a star basketball player.
Yeah, he was an All-American.
Phillips had a basketball team for a long time.
Oh, yes.
And I wondered if there was a connection there.
Yeah, I have a picture of the basketball team that Paul played on at Phillips. I have one of the Phillips. When they were 66 years old, they put out a book on
yes, I have a copy of it.
Oh, okay. Then that basketball team, there's only one picture in there of a basketball team. And Endicott is in there.
Okay.
He's a very, he got his degree at KU in business administration. Kansas was always good in that field. And so he did quite well at Phillips. As a matter of fact, he was the third chief executive officer that Phillips ever had. Frank Phillips was the first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Boots Adams was the second.
Oh, yes, yes.
And after him was Paul Endicott.
When you were growing up and going through high school, had you thought about, one of my notes here says that you were delivering newspapers and mowing lawns to help your family?
Oh, yeah. Well, I delivered the Kansas City Star, which is a good paper. Even today is a very good paper. In fact, I was telling this story to a friend of mine here in the building, and he said, "Oh my, Kansas City Star." He said, "I used to read that regularly." Yes, a lot of people that I found that, boy, they thought that paper was the best. In Kansas City, Missouri had two papers. One was the Post and one of them was the Star. The Post has disappeared, but that was one part of the empire that was built up by the, what was his name, the great journalist.
Wasn't a Scripps paper, was it? Hearst?
Hearst. William Randolph Hearst.
Ed, when did you start thinking about going to college? Or was it always assumed you were going to do that?
No. I was too fascinated with playing basketball and football. And could think about college, although my mother got me started to thinking about college, and she kept telling me that I was going to college, that I had to go, that she and my father did not have the money to send me, but I could go, I could work my way through. And that was, she was always pointing out young men that were really making a name for themselves that had done that.
Your father have any influence? I mean, he had must have had a law degree, so.
Well, no, he didn't get his degree in law. That back in those days, that was back in the latter part of the 19th century, and people would get to work themselves up to a point where they could pass the bar examination. Merely by really what this guy would call paralegal now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's what he did. And he was never very successful. In fact, Oklahoma was a bad place to go into to law unless you went into the oil industry. And he didn't. And my father and I were never very close. I was very close to my mother. Now, she was a very capable person, unusual, I would say. And she was extremely good in math, but better than my father. And I think that's probably one of the reasons that I leaned to her and help that I got. But she kept telling me that you can go to college, you can work your way through. And here she'd point out any number of young men that I looked up to and admired that had succeeded in doing that. Well, I made a reputation in high school and in newspapers. I was on several all-star teams in southeastern Kansas. And I had dreams of going up to KU where Frog Allen was the great basketball coach up there. And my brother-in-law, who worked for Sherwin-Williams, was a chemist, and took an interest in chemistry, and I made high marks in high school. Also, I made high marks at Michigan too. I was particular. I never made anything in my whole life less than an A in math. In high school or in Michigan. Every math course I took there, I made an A in. And so my brother-in-law said, well, your capabilities in math and demonstrated also your interest in chemistry. He said, I wouldn't be a chemist. I'd be a chemical engineer. And he said he took, I think it was a journal that was put out by McGraw-Hill, Chemical and Metallurgical Engineering. Mm-hmm. And there had been a study made, this was before the day of accrediting schools, or particularly professional schools like chemical engineering, and he told me that there were three schools that were tremendous. One of them was MIT, which was a rich man's school, and he thought I probably would not be able to get to achieve a degree in chemical engineering at MIT because I didn't have the money to pay the tuition and a lot of other things. Well, anyway, he said he thought actually that he didn't say Michigan, he said Ann Arbor. He said, I think Ann Arbor has the best faculty in chemical engineering in the country. And frankly, that was what a friend of mine who went up to the high places in DuPont, he got his doctorate at Michigan, and he and I called the golden era of Michigan in chemical engineering. And so I knew that Michigan was quite bent in the direction of athletics, and but particularly at that time there was fielding ACOs in football, but they also had an interest in basketball players. Now they didn't have any scholarships in those days, and they assured me that I would not be given any money, but they would get me a job so I could so I could pay for my board, and that's all. Well, I had borrowed enough money in 1925, that was after I graduated from high school, that I could pay my what they call an out-of-state student. So you had to have, that was, I think, $125 I had to have for that. Otherwise, it was free. And I matriculated at Ann Arbor, at the university.
That was 1925, then?
25, yes, sir. I had been working in the oil fields there in Oklahoma, making a whole sum of $4 a day. Mm. Saving every bit of it, and that was how I accumulated a meager amount of money that I did so that I could get into the school. Then I went up there and they got me the job immediately for my board, and I found out that jobs were easy to get. And
So you were 19, or eight? Were you 18?
18.
And so your work in the oil fields was just during summers and things like that?
Yeah, it was hard work. And there was quite a bit, during that time, there was quite a bit of work available. There was a lot of highway building going on. At that time, in 1925, practically all of the United States highway system was dirt roads. In fact, I thought it was quite a feat when a high school friend of mine, his parents were talking about driving from Chicago to New York City, and they were on pavement the whole way. And I thought, well, my God, we didn't have any paving around there at all. Not out at an inner city or town, but not near, outside the towns. So I lived to see that whole highway system in this country mature.
The interest in chemistry, did that come from when you were in high school?
Yes.
Where did it start?
Yes, in high school. I used to go over to Coffeyville, where my brother-in-law was a chemist there for the plant that Sherwin-Williams had there. And he taught me more chemistry than I learned in high school. But I learned some in high school, too. But I did have a fascination for it, and I still do.
Did you ever have a chemistry set or anything at home that you...
No. No, I never did that. Because most of the chemistry that you involves mathematics, mm-hmm. particularly physical chemistry. And that is really one of the foundations of chemical engineering. And I ate that up. I was really fascinated by that. And that's, I find that I'm still doing it. A big part of that paper that I wrote was to explore the cycloalkane fuels. Now that's like benzene is a six, the molecule of benzene is six carbon atoms, and each one of them has a hydrogen atom attached to it, and it's in a ring. But the alkanes have two hydrogen atoms each. Now, the reason benzene became so prominent in the early years of chemistry was that it was produced from coal. Coking of coal. But we've learned how that we can hydrogenate it, and we make what I used to call cyclohexane, I still do. That's an alkane. The alkane molecules, the carbon atoms, each have two hydrogen atoms. Benzene, they only have one. But I went through and designed a plant which